Today, my guest is Chris Gethin, one of the world's leading body transformation experts. He's also editor of bodybuilding.com and has helped educate millions of people through his video training programs. Chris reveals his top tips on how to reduce your age.
I'm in bed at 7:30. I may look like a party animal with tattoos and a mohawk, but I'm in bed at 7:30 every evening, optimizing my sleep. I do whatever I can to manage my stress. I earth myself all the time. I'm wearing earthing trainers.
The sweet spot to looking good.
So for the majority of the people, if they can completely control their environment, I'll get them training 5 days a week for about 45 minutes each session.
And how to hit your 50s in a superhuman condition.
I think, you know, there are good obsessions and bad obsessions. I find that I have a good obsession over this because it just makes me feel so much better.
Chris, hello and welcome to my show. And Chris, you're sitting in Mumbai and I'm sitting in London. Isn't this amazing?
Yeah, technology is a wonderful thing. I actually got to come to London this weekend. I'm only there for 4 days though, and then I come straight back.
Well, listen, I am so excited to get into this chat because you represent everything I love, believe it or not, bodybuilding and biohacking. So I'm so excited to be able to get into the nuts and bolts of all of those things. But before we start, could you tell myself and my audience about your journey from, well, I guess a boy from Wales, from the Valleys, and how you became the number one transformational body coach in the world?
Right. Well, yeah, that's a long story, but I'll shorten it. So when I was living in Wales, grew up on a farm there, and I left Wales 99, I believe, to pursue what is now my career in health and fitness. And so I was racing motocross for many, many years, had a lot of injuries, and it was a back injury that put an end to my career. And it was through physiotherapy, weight training through physiotherapy, that alleviated me of a lot of the pain that I was experiencing. And so I thought I wanted to study that a little bit more to see, you know, because it was alleviating me of the pain, it's alleviating me of the depression that I was going through after I'd retired from motocross, because that had been my identity for so many years. So I the more that I learned about it, the more I realized I was able to retain this content, which I never did in school. I hated school. I wanted to be on my motorbike all the time or be, you know, playing on the farm. And so I decided then to go to college for several years to study nutrition and international health and sports therapy. And that's what took me into the career that I have within this industry now. And it really started taking off for me, I'd say, in the year 2001, when I had my first gym in Australia. I moved to Australia. I lived there for 5 years. And I started putting people through transformations because I didn't offer personal training packages like 10 sessions, 20 sessions. It all had to have a sense of urgency. So it'd be like a 6-week transformation or a 12-week transformation or an 18-week transformation day, you know, based on that individual. And that's what got me a little bit of recognition through the then Body for Life program. So I had 2 clients that won the Body for Life program. And it kind of just accelerated from there. And then in 2005, I moved from there to the US. I was living in California for a while. And I was competing in natural drug-free bodybuilding throughout this time as well to keep myself accountable and give myself a goal to work on things. So when I was competing in these shows and transforming myself, it helped me help my clients a little bit better because I knew what they were going through, the struggles that they would encounter, whether that be from cravings, lethargy, injury, or whatever. And, you know, that's what I still do to this day. However, I'm not just doing it so much and hands-on. I'm in India at the moment working with a celebrity. So every now and again, for about 3 months of the year, or maybe 2 months of the year, I will do so, but the majority is online.
So much goes into bodybuilding. I mean, I've competed twice, not at the extent that you have. And I'm also somebody that is fascinated about optimizing the potential, not only of the body, but of the mind. But looking at everything, certainly in my own fitness version, journey and studying other people's fitness journeys and wondering how healthy is that in terms of what you used to do and potentially what you're doing today. I've just reached a lovely ripe old age of 52.
I would never have.
No, but I'm doing everything to try and become younger. And one of the things that is interesting is just looking at how healthy my journey actually was. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you think about the fitness industry and how healthy it actually is?
Yeah, great question, because I've noticed the more stress and I guess demand there is on a certain appearance, especially now we have all these social platforms, it's a lot of pressure for people to look a certain way. And now that we know that there's certain drugs out there like semaglutide or Ozempic, people are just reaching for that fast, quick fix, not really knowing what the possible side effects could be in the future for that particular individual. You know, obviously it's very difficult for some people to, you know, to get in shape, and you know, they deal with motivational issues. But from my perspective, I always thought that I was doing bodybuilding in a healthy way, but I wasn't. And it wasn't until I actually got diagnosed with mold toxicity in 2014, where I went down this biohacking rabbit hole, where I really looked at optimizing my health. Because bodybuilders, or a lot of athletes, will eat a good 5-6 meals a day, as you know. So if you're not eating or consuming food that is grass-fed, wild-caught, humane-raised, etc., you're taking in a lot of antibiotics, a lot of glyphosate, a lot of possible artificial ingredients, if you're taking a lot of supplements as well, that the general public isn't taking. So you could potentially be unhealthier than the general public if you're consuming that many more meals and stressing your gut microbiome, your internal digestive system, et cetera, et cetera. So then when I started looking at optimizing the foods and making sure that I was eating foods that were easier to digest, and then, you know, a lot of us would sacrifice sleep. You know, when you're dieting down for a show, you're like, oh, I don't feel like sleeping. You know, it just gets dysregulated because your hormones go out of balance. Then it can be an unhealthy journey, or not the healthiest of journeys. So, you know, I totally get it. Just because somebody has a six-pack and some delts, it doesn't mean that their internal organs or their lifeline, their health from a spiritual aspect and from an optimized aspect is there. So I get it 100%. And that's what I try to do now as a trainer, is try to meet these two in the middle. So, hey, let's fast once a week on your non-training day. And, you know, let's look at the sources of the foods that you're consuming, but making sure that you're getting optimal sleep. So I'll look at my clients' sleep scores, making sure that they're earthing themselves. While I'm talking to you right now, I've got my feet on an earthing mat. You know, we have to biohack our environment based on where we are. Like when I'm living at home, I live a little bit out in the sticks. I don't have to biohack my environment or myself as I do when I'm in a city. And the majority of my clients live in populated metropolitan cities, so we have to really look at the biohacks a little bit more.
Wow, there's so much there to unpick. I'm just going back to the mold toxicity that you mentioned that sort of started you on the sort of the biohacking journey. What sort of symptoms were you sort of feeling, and how did you even know that you, I mean, I wouldn't even know what mold toxicity is. How did you discover that?
Yeah, it was a long journey to discover it. Like, I definitely had it in 2012 and 2013, didn't get diagnosed until 2014. I visited Dr. Spanaug and his clinic in Oldsmar, Florida, and he has people from all around the world waiting to see him for Lyme's disease, mold toxicity, etc. And the transformations that I witnessed was unbelievable. So I transformed people from fat to thin, or preparing them for an Ironman triathlon or a UFC fight or a role, where I would see people in there who just could not even tell the time. They could not write their own signature on a check. You know, they're suffering from dementia, Alzheimer's, blah, blah, blah. Or maybe they'd go in a wheelchair. They had ALS. But then they'd end up walking out and being able to tell the time and write the signature. It was unbelievable. It blew me away. So it was him that diagnosed me with the mold toxicity and the symptoms that I had. I was definitely an aggressive person. I was sleeping about 3 hours per night. You know, I'd literally go to bed. I'd wake up about 30 minutes later thinking, oh, it's time to get up. But it wasn't. And then I'd go back to sleep again and wake up. And I would, my analogy of it or comparison of it back then was like getting on like a 10-hour flight every single night, where you're just not getting proper sleep. But I had to be in bed for a long duration just to get 3 hours. And, you know, looking back, I definitely wasn't myself. There's no doubt about it. And once I got diagnosed and cleared myself of this toxicity, which took at least six months, because obviously when you're detoxing, you can't detox too fast, especially when there's neurotoxins involved, because I had a heavy metal count as well. You have to do it gradually.
So what was that? What was that recovery program? What did that look like? And were you able to train, I guess? Did that affect the training?
Do you know what? It didn't affect my training. But I would see people after, like, you know, we'd 5 days a week was doing colonic hydrotherapy. We'd be sticking to a certain dietary protocol, a supplemental protocol. I'd have IVs 5 days a week with ALA, obviously, of course, glutathione, anything that would help detox these pathways and senescent cells. And when I'd finished the IV, there's a lot of other people there as well. And I'd finish this protocol, I'd just see people pass out. And I remember the one day, because I'd see this all the time, I remember one day asking one of the nurses, what's wrong with these people? And, you know, what's happening with them? And they said what they were detoxing from was actually less than me. But because I'd created this resilience, because I'm one of these guys that's like, I'm going to out-train you, I'm going to outwork you, doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. It was just very silly and very egotistical. I was able to be in denial of this sickness, and I was just getting more toxicity overload and overload and overload. But that resilience, still had a resilience against kind of cleansing myself. So I was able to train straight after when a lot of people were kind of passed out. So sometimes when you're saying, yeah, I'm tough, there's nothing wrong with me, I'm okay, that's the very, you know, the wrong thing to do. You need to admit to yourself there's something wrong. But I think maybe I didn't have the awareness then either.
You mentioned the word resilience a few times there. Where does your resilience come from? Where do you think that?
Yeah, it's definitely my upbringing. Working on, you know, growing up on a farm. You know, we didn't have any money or much money growing up at all. And, you know, I'd help on the farm before going to school in the morning. So getting up very early. You know, I'd always be helping my father try to make ends meet. You know, he'd be fixing cars and selling them, making garden furniture and selling them, making trailers and selling them. So I was always helping him with welding or bleeding a clutch or something like that. And then when I got into motocross, you know, I was racing pretty much every weekend, and you're around like an extreme lot of characters, and you create a lot of resilience. You know, I'm getting injured from a very, very young age. So now when, you know, I get injured a lot, but I still participate in a lot of extreme sports. So like when I hurt myself now, I'm like, eh. And I've always been like that because it's happened from a very young age. Like I tore 68% of my tricep off the bone, ragdolling it from snowboarding a couple of years ago. And as soon as I felt it, I'm like, yeah, that's come off. But it was Valentine's Day and I'd booked my wife and I to go out for dinner. I was like, we are going out to that dinner. So you do create this resilience. Is that a good thing? Well, if you know what you're doing, but if you don't, then you have to kind of be aware and just say, look, I need fixing. I've got to, I need help.
I mean, I've spoken to quite a few people in my show in terms of resilience. I've interviewed a lot of veterans, people that have served in Afghanistan and Iraq. And the one thing that I can see in some people is this resilience, particularly I think in people that do extreme sports. Do you think in terms of bodybuilding and your triathlons and your Ironman, which is the hardest part? Is it the physical side or is it the mental side?
Yeah, it's definitely the mental side, because to a certain degree you have to disassociate yourself from the physical being. So, you know, the pain that you're encountering, you know, because like if you're doing an Ironman triathlon and now you've, you know, you've swam basically 2.3 miles and now you've done a 114 mile bike ride, now you've got to go and do a full marathon. So a lot of doubt comes into your brain and your legs are killing you at this point, but now you've got to run this full marathon. So yeah, there is a physical aspect, but you have to disassociate yourself to a certain degree and go, well, you know what? This isn't going to kill me. I just got to look at that next tree or that next sign or that next corner, get past there, and that will get me past the next step, you know? But, you know, there's that is the sacrifice, but the sense of success and accomplishment after that is always worth it, as long as you're not putting yourself in a position where it could possibly take years off your life. So I try to balance all this. You know, I do every year, I'll test my biological age to ensure that it is coming down and I'm not accelerating. And like I'm 49 years old tomorrow, but my biological age, thank you very much, is 26 at the moment. So I want to keep bringing that down and down and down by making sure that I prioritize my recovery and optimize my recovery before I even think about performance.
So we've got to go there. 26, you're 49 tomorrow. Firstly, congratulations, happy birthday. But 26, now I just did my glycan age. So I just tested my age about 6 weeks ago. And I was so disappointed because although I'm 52, mine was 50. And after everything I do, I thought I'd be younger. Which, you know, might sound a bit big-headed, but most people tell me I don't look my age. So I thought, well, I certainly don't feel my age, and I still train as though I'm going to compete. I probably don't do the same nutrition like I used to. But yeah, I was quite disappointed. How did you get your age to 26? What are your secrets?
Well, I'd say it's probably a collective thing. You know, you should be quite happy with that because my cousin who's 34 just had his glycan age test done. And hopefully he's not listening to this, but he came back. It's like 70 something. And this guy's fast. He's in good shape. He looks after himself. I think it's stress related. Yeah, he's the second worst person that glycan age have ever tested, unfortunately. I thought it'd be good because he's related to me, but obviously not. But for me, like I do peptides, like I'll do Epitalon a couple of times a year. Sorry, Epitalon a couple of times a year. And that's been shown to help reduce or help prevent the shortening of your telomeres.
Is that something you can do here in the UK or is it most? Yep. Oh, you can. Okay.
Yes, yeah, you can get Epitalon. There's a few, there is a peptide company that's there in the UK. I forget the name of it at the moment. You know, places in the US that I know and they do ship to the UK, Limitless, Peptide Sciences. Phil Mikens, I don't know if you've ever had him on the show. He's a specialist in bioregulating peptides and he's based in the UK. So he knows all these things. There's a lot of research from Russia that goes back years and years and years on human trials as well, showing the efficacy on them. I've done stem cells on a couple of occasions as well. You know, I've had a lot of injuries, so I'll be going for stem cells again in October. So I'm sure that helps as well. And, you know, I make sure I'm in bed at 7:30. I may look like a party animal with tattoos and a mohawk, but I'm in bed at 7:30 every evening, optimizing my sleep. I do whatever I can to manage my stress. I earth myself all the time. I'm wearing earthing trainers. There's the beach out there, so I'll always earth myself on the beach morning and night as well. And I find that makes a massive difference when I'm in a very populated place like this, staying in a hotel, a lot of non-native EMFs and Wi-Fi. I do wear like even a Defender Shield, and I'm not sponsored by these people, fanny packs, not because I'm a bodybuilder, but it helps mitigate a lot of the EMFs as well. So this, and you know, I make sure that I wear the blue light blockers for a couple of hours before bed. If I'm working out in a gym that has harsh lighting as well, I'll wear the yellow lens. I use PEMF. I've got one at home that I lie on. So I'm on a PEMF on my lounge a lot of the time. And I also have an ice bath at home, and I have an infrared sauna, and I use that every single day. I'll do the ice bath for 3 minutes, post 30 minutes in the sauna in the morning, and I'll do 1 minute in the evening. And studies have shown that sauna 5 to 7 times a week for about 25, 30 minutes can help reduce all-cause mortality by about 40%. So I do that as well. You know, made sure that I ripped out all the metal in my mouth. I don't know if you know Dr. Dom.
Yes, I heard him speak. He was fantastic at the event.
Yeah, great friend of mine. So it's very important, you know, to remove, because I had a lot of metal, you know, being from the UK, growing up in the 70s and 80s, had a lot of metal that I had to remove because I had a lot of metal toxicity. So doing all these things, I've just noticed my biological age every year come down and down. So there is hope, because mine was up high. But it can come down, you know, and, you know, a lot of breath work. I do use a lot of biohacks, even though I don't have to. I have gone away on 10-day silent retreats, vipassanas, but I'm not very good at meditation, even though I've done a lot of it extensively. So I'll use the brain tap. So whenever I feel that I can take today's technology and combine it with our ancestral wisdom, I will. I'll put them together.
So a lot of this sounds, I mean, look, I'm fascinated and I'm sort of all in or just starting my journey into biohacking. But I guess for the general population, a little bit like, you know, nutrition is hard enough just to get on top of, as is their training. What would you say are your maybe top three biohacking tips for people that are just beginners, that are just maybe they're not, you know, bodybuilders or Ironman, but maybe they're just a general person that's fairly fit, but not an extreme. What sort of three hacks could really make an improvement?
Yeah, easy. So like 99% of my clients are just the average person. It's like, what do I do? So number one is the sleep, prioritizing the sleep. Like, we all know that we can live without food longer than water, you know, mm-hmm. and sleep. So sleep is the priority. You know, make sure that we get a good amount of sleep and try not to go to bed too late. The longer that we stay up past dusk, the longer our cortisol levels stay up. And remember, that's a stress hormone. Heart disease is the biggest killer. And then hydration, of course, you know, making sure that you are fully hydrated. And that doesn't mean having teas and coffees, mm-hmm. because the caffeine does have a diuretic effect. Can I make it four?
Yes, you can make it five. Go for it.
Okay, I'll keep going then. So the other thing would be getting sunlight. You know, try to get it at sunrise and sunset so you get the restorative red frequencies, and it can enhance your vitamin D levels, which is actually a hormone. It's not a vitamin, which is essential for your immune system and energy and feeling good. And then, like I mentioned before, earth yourself. Take your shoes and socks off. Go walking on a grassy patch, or stand there for 10 minutes while you're getting the sun in the morning and in the evening. And lastly, I'll make it a fifth then, is just try to put your phone off as much as you possibly can, because we know that this device is very addicting. So we're utilizing dopamine and dopamine and dopamine, which isn't good if we don't balance it out with our serotonin and our oxytocin, which is our rest and digest, to put us in that parasympathetic state, because the majority of us are in this sympathetic state of stress instead of rest. So those would be my things. And then you could throw meditation in there on top.
Yeah, I've just literally started, believe it or not, turning my phone on airplane mode much more often, especially at nighttime when I'm, you know, I dim everything, dim the lighting. I try to get to bed at 9 or 9:30. But I have more recently struggled with sleep, so I can get to sleep fine, but I find I wake up at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and then, you know, if I've got things ruminating in my mind, I can't get back to sleep. But yeah, I'm working on that. It's and that is possibly why my age wasn't where it should be, or where it could be, should I say.
Yeah, the one thing I always ask people if they have issues with sleeping is, like, number one is, like, have you had your home tested for, like, dirty electricity? There could be dirty electricity there. So there's building biologists in every city now, pretty much, that can come to see if there's a lot of dirty electricity. And is your bed a metal frame? because then that's going to act like an antenna there. So obviously you want to try to go for a wood frame when possible. So those could be a couple of things that could disrupt you. But, you know, never try not to have anything plugged in your bedroom. Even if you have your phone on airplane mode, but on charge, that can put out a lot of dirty electricity. So whenever I come to a hotel, like I am now, I just unplug everything. Unplug the clock, unplug the phone, whatever.
Wow. I mean, it is so interesting, and it is quite a mind feel of knowing what is the right thing to do or how much you can do, because you can get very obsessed with this. Like a training, I guess there is a certain element in us all that may be a bit, that has that sort of obsessive side. I certainly know when I was doing the competitions, I became very obsessed with food or lack of food or food programs, or I mean, I used to watch Come Dine With Me and cookery programs, and you know, I never liked to cook. I was never bothered about that before, but it just became such an obsession. Do you think that is part of the mindset of sort of going there to that extreme with your body, and including being so not upset, yes, sort of thinking about longevity and living longer?
It could be overwhelming. Yeah, I think it's very important to have some type of balance there. So, for instance, if you are going to have a cheat meal, then you're fine with it. You know, don't have guilt over it and go and do 3 hours of cardio. Then that is a bad obsession. I think, you know, there are good obsessions and bad obsessions. I find that I have a good obsession over this because it just makes me feel so much better. I'm a better person to be around. I've got more energy. I'm more productive. I have more confidence. I get more stuff done, you know, and I enjoy it. However, if I don't follow the lifestyle like I'm following, then I'm disrupted. So Tim Gray, who I'm sure you know, who has a health optimization summit, when I first came out here in January was the first time, I said, God, I'm not sleeping at night. I'm earthing myself. I'm walking on the beach in the morning. And Tim said, try walking on the beach in the evening as well. And I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. It fixed me. So now I was a better person to be around. I was more energetic. I had more energy in the morning. You know, I'm working with a client here and he's paying me money to make sure that I'm on my game. So I felt like I was back on my game. Now, this isn't something that has a placebo effect. I was quantifying it on my Oura Ring because I'm sleeping. But it goes to show that little things like this can have a positive effect on your life. So if people would think that's an obsession, then yeah, I'll call it an obsession, but it makes me feel so much better. So I'll be obsessed.
And I think that is it. That's what it's down to, isn't it? It's how it makes you feel. So, and you know, going back to that whole training, I love being in the gym. Not the gym's not for everybody, but I love it. Yeah, I have heard, in terms of longevity, training isn't necessarily the best thing. What is your views on that?
Well, it's overtraining. Overtraining isn't the best thing because that can obviously downregulate your thyroid, your hormones, if you're overtraining. So, you know, getting ready for Ironman triathlons or ultra marathons definitely wasn't the healthiest thing for me, but I would do it in a way where, so for instance, a lot of people that I would train with, they would do like 2 hours every day. I would bring it down to 45 minutes. So I was doing a lot of HIIT work. Only on a Sunday would I go, you know what? I'm going to spend a long time in the saddle today because I need to. I have to get used to that. So I'd go for a 100-mile bike ride, but I wouldn't be pushing it really, really hard. I'd get it done in like 5.5-6 hours. So I'm just taking it easy. I'm eating along the way, you know, making sure that I'm fueling myself and recovering and getting a good night's sleep before and after. And that never really affected my methylation age or my glycan age or my telomere age. So I think you have to kind of balance it to a certain degree.
And what is that sweet spot for, again, let's talk about the general person, that, you know, you're the king of body transformation, but let's face it, we all want to look good. You know, and it is about health. It is about longevity, absolutely. But, you know, as you said in the beginning, everyone's looking on Instagram, looking at this model, looking at that model. And I think we'd all be sort of not telling the truth if we didn't say actually looking good is really, really important. So what is the sweet spot to looking really good in terms of how often you should train and what sort of things you should be doing?
Yeah, it's all dependent on that individual's lifestyle. So for the majority of the people, if they can completely control their environments, I'll get them training 5 days a week for about 45 minutes each session. However, if that person has a lot of other commitments with their kids, maybe their work keeps them up at late at night or their shift worker, maybe I'll have them training 3 times a week at about 45 minutes to an hour. So it's all dependent on that individual, but it's no more than 5 days a week because I have to optimize the recovery in order for them to perform. And it's all about quality and not quantity.
And would that 5 days be a mixture of cardio and resistance training? Or are you...
Just resistance training. I always have everybody do cardio for a minimum of 20 minutes every single day, every day. You know, I think cardio is very important because the majority of people out there are doing what I'm doing right now, and that's just sat down, and it's not enough movement. When I'm at home, I have a treadmill desk, so I'm always working, doing my podcast from there. You know, so there's always some form of movement because I think it's very important. You know, we've studied like the blue zones, and we see that some of these blue zones that live to a disproportionate age, of, you know, they're centenarians, they keep moving. They're always active. They do physical work. And some of these people and these cultures don't even have a word for retirement. They don't know what retirement is. So I think movement is the king. And a lot of us are conditioned to just sit in our butts when we shouldn't be.
Completely agree. I gave up my corporate job 10 years ago, went back for a couple of years. And it's the best thing I think I've done for my health. Just in terms of moving, I walk everywhere. I'm very blessed to live in a beautiful part of England, in Richmond. So there's lots of lovely walks outside by the river and the park. And I walk to the gym, which is a good, you know, I make it, you know, if I'm training with my trainer, I walk half an hour to get there and walk back. But I use that as my cardio, and I know I should be pushing my VO2 more. What are your thoughts around interval as opposed to the long steady state cardio?
Yeah, I like to combine them both. And it all comes down to that individual's stress response. So if that person's a very stressed individual, then maybe I'm not going to stress them even more with HIIT work. But I actually did an interview with Dave Asprey a couple of weeks ago here, and he's, you know, obviously a massive, massive advocate of re-HIIT work, especially when it comes to like, you know, exercise with like the Carol bike, for instance. And I think it's really, really effective. You know, a lot of studies that have been shown by Dr. Rhonda Patrick shows that HIIT work is really, really good at possibly reducing your biological age. You know, it's a nice hormetic response that we get from it. But as long as you're pretty good and you're not stressed all the time, and then you're working out with resistance work and you're creating more stress, and then you're doing more stress with HIIT cardio, then you're okay. And that's why I like to kind of balance it out. If that person is stressed, they're in a severe calorie deficit, I'm not going to put them on HIIT work. If they're in a maintenance phase or calorie surplus, HIIT work is fine and they're controlling their environment and not overly stressed.
And when it comes to nutrition, again, around the sort of longevity area and us wanting to live longer, there's been a lot of talk as well around protein and how much protein. And I guess as a bodybuilder and someone, I love my protein. And I don't believe the average person eats enough protein. I think our RDA levels are well under what they should be. What are your views on protein and how much we should be eating? Again, talking about the general public.
Of course, yeah. It all comes down to how much that individual utilizes. So you can't say there's a ceiling on how much protein you should consume because someone is going to utilize a lot more than the next person. It comes down to how much muscle tissue that person is holding, how often and how intense they train. Then their requirement is going to be much, much higher than the average person. So, you know, if I have an individual who isn't working out much, I'll probably get them on like 0.7 grams of protein per pound of body weight. Okay, just to maintain that. But then if I have an individual who's active and maybe they're on a diet, then I could get them on 1.1 grams of protein per pound of body weight. But if I've got a professional athlete, and that's a big professional athlete, it's anywhere between 1.5 and 2 grams per pound of body weight, because they're going to utilize it a lot more efficiently than the average person. But one thing that I will do, because I try to encourage nose-to-tail eating for my clients who aren't vegan or who aren't vegetarian, and a lot of people don't want to do that,
What's nose-to-tail?
Nose-to-tail, eating organs like liver, having heart, anything like that. Because the problem that we face when we're consuming a lot of muscle meat, like chicken breast or steak or anything like that, we're consuming a lot of methionine. Now, it's that methionine by itself can lead to the onset of accelerated aging. So that's why in the wild, you'll find animals always go to the organs first, because that's where a lot of the nutrients carry and are very bioavailable. You'll have your choline, you'll have your glycine, you'll have your iron, your vitamin B, etc. So a lot of people don't do that. So I'll get them to supplement with glycine so you can balance out the methionine and glycine ratio. So that could be supplements, it could be collagen, it could be bone broth, you know, anything that you can to, or organ meats, obviously, to really balance that out. And that will help prevent the onset of accelerated aging from a lot of protein.
What are your, first of all, any key tips on what people should look for in supplements, and then what your go-to supplements are?
Well, I always try to get my clients to do like blood work first so I can see where their deficiencies are. Because like, for instance, you may not need vitamin D, but I need a lot of vitamin D because I don't process it from photobiomodulation. So from the sun, I don't get it. So I have to supplement very, very high with it. I think it's genetic because my mum's very deficient in it, or was very deficient in it as well. So I always try to get people to do the blood work first. But, you know, supplements can have an effect of around 3 to maybe 5%, dependent on that individual. So if that person is working all day and they're going to miss meals, then of course having a supplement like a meal replacement or a protein shake is really going to help that person possibly make up 5%. But some people may not need as much. But, you know, all depends in if you're eating a lot of fish. If you're not getting a lot of omega-3s, then that can help, obviously, by supplementing with it. You know, like a good insurance is like multivitamin, and then your vitamin D. And then, you know, if you're going down the anti-aging rabbit hole, then that's a completely different sector of supplements again, and again, dependent on your age. So if you're, you know, getting past the age of 40, your NAD levels are going to decline. So maybe you're going to supplement with NAD or an NAD precursor. And if you're pre-diabetic, maybe you want to go for a GDA, you know, a blood glucose disposal agent. So again, it's all dependent on that individual. So I don't try to put a blanket blueprint. I like to provide a little bit more customization to it, dependent on where those deficiencies lie. And if that person is having trouble with sleeping, then maybe we need to look at their hormones before we suggest like tryptophan or SAMe or GABA or anything like that.
And as you, and I hate to remind you this, but as it's your birthday tomorrow and the end of the 40s and the beginning of the 50s are coming up, is there anything that you're looking to change in maybe, anything that you're looking to change as you enter, when you enter into your 50s?
Well, I'm definitely, you know, like I am really taking a lot more of the anti-aging supplements. Like I said, you know, I do eat a lot of muscle meat, so I do balance out with a lot of glycine. Luckily, the people here at this hotel know me very, very well. So they'll be giving me liver on my birthday tomorrow. They will be bringing ice up as well, so I can have my ice bath. And I also have someone coming here to give me ozone as well. So I'll do a blood transfusion and clear my blood. So I guess I'm just going to spend more time, you know, doing whatever I can to prevent the onset of aging. That's where my supplement protocol will go. And as I mentioned, I'm going to do stem cells again, and I'll try to keep that frequent as well, not just as a fix to my injuries, but as a preventative for the future. Because, you know, I've battered my body about with a lot of these extreme sports that I do, and I'm not going to slow down anytime soon. So whatever I can to buffer the possible regrets in the future, the better.
And listen, how do the public get into your training, into your nutrition, into your longevity? I hear that you may be bringing out a new program.
Yes, that's right. So I started back in 2009, I started doing something called video trainers because not everybody could have access to me. Not everybody could afford me. So I did, I'd film basically like me getting ready for an Ironman. You want to do an Ironman? Follow me. This is what I'm eating. This is how I'm training. This is everything. This is the supplements I'm taking, blah, blah, blah. Follow me. And you'd have a video to watch every single day, especially over the weekends, because a lot of people lose their motivation over the weekends. And I've done that for various things like muscle building and whatnot. And I am releasing a plan next month, September 18th, which is called the 12-Week Legacy Video Trainer. And this is specifically for people who want to lose body fat. They want to build or maintain muscle. They want to reverse their biological age. So they want to biohack themselves. They want to optimize their health and how to train around injuries. So that's a video that they'll watch every single day for 12 weeks. And for people who want to compete in a show as well. So at the end of the 12 weeks, I guest posed at a bodybuilding show because I'm not competing in bodybuilding anymore. So I guest posed at a bodybuilding show to show people this is the process. This is what you do in the last week. You know, this is what your peak week looks like. So it's like a four-prong approach on that video trainer.
And I'd say, so, okay, there's a few questions that spring to mind. What makes it different? Because obviously there are a lot of training programs that you can buy out there and go online. I know you've got a fantastic name, but what do you think is the real unique point?
The thing is that they get a video every single day. So they see me go through this transformation where I dropped 30 pounds over this transformation. You know what it's like when you're getting ready for a bodybuilding show, you lose a lot of weight. You do lose a lot of weight, but you're able to gain a lot of muscle. So I actually lost 10% in body fat, and I actually put on 10 pounds of muscle during that phase. I lost 30 pounds though in total. So this is, you know, I'm the only person in the world that have actually done these video series where people have a video to watch every single day. So it's a big thing, you know. One of these things cost me over $100,000 to shoot because I'm having a video crew with me every single day. And then they have to edit all the footage because I'm shooting footage as well with my GoPro, on my phone, everything. So it's specific, it's the accountability. I'm basically their personal trainer in a virtual sense.
And is it just for men?
No, men, female, young, old, beginner, advanced, everyone.
So say I was coming to it, a 52-year-old woman that sort of obviously trains five times a week. If I don't want to lose fat, but I want to, in looking at my biological age, I probably want to increase muscle more than I want to lose fat. Would that be something that would be appropriate to me? Or
yeah, good. So you'd have to customize it in a respect where you wouldn't be increasing your cardio week by week. You'd possibly just do the amount of cardio that you're doing right now. And if you feel that you're going into too much of a calorie deficit to put on muscle, then you wouldn't lower your calories as I suggest based on your new body weight.
Right. So you sort of adjust, or people can adjust it, and do you give them the guidelines to say, okay, if you're a 50-year-old man, do this. If you're a 20-year-old, then I guess it's slightly different.
Yeah, exactly. And people that join us are part of a private community as well, where they can ask me questions. They can ask other people that, because some people have been through every single one of my programs. They just keep doing them again and again and again. So there's people within a community that's experienced, and obviously my team as well. And I go in and answer questions all the time as well. So people do have, say, look, much like you want to put on muscle, you don't want to lose as much body fat. What do I do? I'll help you.
Wow. And I think the key piece that's probably very different as well to a lot of plans is this longevity, is the biohacking side, and you're adding that in as well.
Yeah, that's the first time that I've done this. The first time that I've actually biohacking side of things, because there was more of a demand and more of a demand as I've been doing it over the years. And then I wanted to put in as well the aspect of how to train around injuries. Because out of all my clients that I've had over the years, I don't know one that has the amount of injuries that I have had, but I'm still able to do what I do. So I just train around it. You know, I don't get discouraged by it. And there's ways, obviously, you can recover a little bit better and more efficiently. But how do you train around these? Because a lot of us work out, not so much for the physical aesthetics. It's more so, it's just therapeutic. It makes us feel better. So how can we continue to feel better whilst not putting ourselves in a position of going backwards?
What are the important takeaways that you think my audience should take from this conversation?
Then I'd say it's, you know, it's baby steps for sure. And it's the consistency. A lot of people are always going from one program to the next program. They hear, okay, this is a there'll be a keto phase. There'll be all sorts of phases. The next supplement that will help lose this body fat. It's the consistency. So it's not five times a week. It's not six. It's consistency on weekends as well. Making sure that you adhere to the goals that you've put out for yourself. Everybody has their best intentions in January. Everybody has their best intentions on a Monday. But come February or Friday, then they start to decline. And I think people just overwhelm themselves by trying to do too much in the beginning. So you just start a little bit and then add a little bit more to it. Because if you throw the kitchen sink at the very beginning, you'll lose one piece, then another piece, and then another piece, and then you get, I guess you lose motivation. But if you're adding little pieces to it, you just see the positive aspect of it growing and growing as opposed to reducing itself.
I think a lot of people think these things can be very frightening, as you say, because they want to do it all. It's either all or nothing. And I know we haven't talked about things like people that eat a lot of chocolate or drink alcohol. There's a whole new thing around, you know, if people are sort of regularly drinking, how that affects their training and whether it's something that they have to rule out completely. Just very quickly, what are your thoughts around that? Because I know we're living in, well, I'm living in London, and let's face it, the sun is shining, and I can guarantee this evening there'll be people all along the river having a few glasses of wine or beer or whatever.
Yeah. It's very influential. I'll say London is that. When the sun is out, everybody's out in the streets outside of the pub because the pub is so packed. So, you know, people learn by observation and they start doing it themselves. I think it's okay in balance. Again, I'm going to use that word balance because I see, it's, especially with the British mentality, we go out on a Friday and it's just a binge drink fest, you know, as opposed to just having a couple of beers or whatever. And there's a few things that you can do as well to mitigate, you know, the aldehyde and the ethanol, you know, on your liver. You know, you can make sure that you take a dihydroberberine and your bitters, etc., to help prevent a lot of that. And I think, you know, if someone's going to have a spirit like a vodka, then have a sparkling water and maybe, you know, a packet of LMNT in there as well. So you're getting hydrated while you're drinking. Yeah, have your electrolytes, you know, just mitigate some of the damage when you are doing it. So, you know, you are staying hydrated at the same time.
I love this, Chris. So what's next for you? We've got the legacy training coming out in a few weeks. How can people get access to that?
It's probably best if they go to my Instagram because I have a link tree in my bio and they can find everything there. And that's probably the best place to come and find me because I've got several websites. Like I have a gym franchise here in India as well. That's a website by itself. So it's probably best to come find me on Instagram.
Great. And we'll put the link to that. We'll put the link as well to the new legacy program as well in the show notes. Any last things that you'd like to say?
No, other than, like I said, people, please be consistent and do yourself a favor. Take a book to bed instead of watching Netflix.
Love it. Chris, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. It's been great.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning into the show. Please subscribe and share. That would really help me get these valuable messages out.